Welcome to the epicenter of sports and entertainment. This is the Root Dog Show. Now, here's your host, Rudy Reyes.
Welcome to the Root Dog Show. Good afternoon or evening, wherever you may be. This is Rudy Reyes. I am on the Root Dog Show. And if you don't know Jeff Barnes by now, shame on you. You should be following Jeff Barnes as well. He does great things for NBA's media. This is his second time here on the show. Thanks a lot for joining me, Jeff, on an impromptu.
Anytime. Like I said, you have carte blanche in my book.
I remember that card. Anyway, I just dated myself there. Speaking of dates, there was a date for a monumental matchup between the Iowa Hawkeyes and the South Carolina Gamecocks. That's a lot to say, and there's a lot of things to go along with that. We'll jump right into it. The Elite Eight matchup was absolutely obscene between Iowa and LSU, rematch of the 2023 National Championship game, but only had drawn, 12.3 million, give or take. Not that that's a small number, and I'm not here to minimize it, but based on what we've seen this past season, we'll jump into that momentarily, but based on what we have seen, this is kind of obscene. When you think about it, I think this is a gender reversal. And I look at this in totality and think, man, did the men's, and we'll dive into that as well, did the men get kind of, I hate to say shafted, but did they compared to the women's turnout for the NCAA tournament?
I don't think so. I think what we're seeing is the brands that both have, right? You look at the men's, especially men's basketball in general, professional, college, right? They're very superstar driven. So when it comes to the men's side, you have the teams with the one and dones are always the teams talking about. The North Carolinas, the Kentuckys, well, those teams got bumped out, okay? It didn't have as much interest other than UConn and a few other teams that were still on the men's side. The women's side is a better brand of basketball. It's more teams. You know, you don't know as many of the stars, but you know who they are. And what happens is you get more wrapped up in the brand of basketball. And people are starting to realize that women's basketball is really good. So I think what you're seeing is the better brand of basketball right now is on the women's side. And it's kind of what we've done with it with the NBA by taking kids straight out of high school, taking them one and done in college, and kind of watering the men's product down to the point where people are less interested. So the more competitive side is the women's side. We got the better ratings on that side, and that's what it should have been. If it's going to be the better product, it should get the better rating.
You know, I'll be honest with you. I agree, and here's why. There are so many different components to the women's basketball tourney that we've not seen in any year prior. Yeah, fine, so there was 12.3 million viewers last year. That was blown out of the water when 24 million people tuned in to watch this game on a combined ESPN and ABC, at least per their reports. And what I've seen from, you know, and you have superstars. Don't get me wrong. There are superstars. Caitlin Clark certainly is part of the conversation, receiving hate from players in the WNBA for whatever reason. It's really no one's business, to be honest with you, what their beef is, because Caitlin Clark proved it at the collegiate level time and time and time again. Is she the face of the NCAA despite the loss against the South Carolina Gamecocks? Well, I would say yes. And again, here's why. She has blown records out of the water consistently. Her three-point shot is extremely deadly. If you give her an open look, she's going to take it to you every single time. And nine times, if not 10 out of 10, will drop that three inside the iron. She is a team player. She understands the team format. She passes the ball to open shooters. Sharing is caring with the basketball, and that's what you need to do. And that's what Caitlin Clark has done her entire career in the NCAA. When you look at her at the next level, is she the consensus number one overall pick to go, or is there someone else like Paige Buecher?
Oh, you got to go Caitlin Clark. You're getting a full bag there, a person that's going to be able to do everything you need on the court. So I think when you look at and be special about it, you know, when you have a special player, the special players go first when it comes to the draft. The really good ones go after. Buecher's no doubt a very, very good ball player, but that is a special ball player in Caitlin Clark, and she's definitely going to be number one overall.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Now, I'm not quite sure off the top of my head who holds that number one overall pick, but that's coming up as well. So we're in and the NFL draft as well is also heading up by the end of the month in Detroit. This is kind of a contrast, and I said gender reversal from the top of the show, is because I think that it is. Brandy has a lot to do with it. Superstars in NCAA has a lot to do with it. And I don't believe that NIL would have any connection with this whatsoever, because this is not a pay-to-play type of scenario. This is Caitlin Clark doing her thing, not worried about money, not worried about the spotlight. Yeah, there's a commercial, maybe two commercials with her in it, but she's not predominantly announced within those commercials, and she's like a cameo inside of a movie, right? For the last, I don't know, 5 seconds, you see that. We see this with the late, great Stan Lee in Spider-Man movies and Marvel, you know, universe movies, where he's like the guy who says something snappy and then that's it. Caitlin Clark appeared in that capacity as well. The difference here is that Caitlin Clark has, again, committed herself to playing and refining her craft throughout her collegiate career. And I believe, I concur, she's going to be the first overall pick. Paige could be second, maybe third. I think that really depends on who's in the need, who wants the best, and who wants a very good player. And I think the best of the best and the cream of the crop, no pun intended, considering it's Iowa, and that's really what they grow out there, is corn. You're going to see Caitlin Clark rise to the top because she is the cream of the crop. That's just how it is. When I dive back into this and I look at the UConn victory over Purdue, to touch on that for half a moment, they did everything right. They did everything right. There was Edie, who did everything that he possibly could. He's broken records. He's done it as a center in the NCAA. I mean, he played his absolute heart out. And another heartbreaker, just like we see last year with Edie, another heartbreaker against a team that, in my opinion, had no business being there, but they did. And they found a way to do it. And that knocked out Purdue, ranked, again, number one. This is the first time we've seen two number ones go at it between UConn and Purdue. When you look at this game specifically, what did UConn do that maybe Purdue didn't? Was it turnovers? Was it the transition offense? Was it defense, or maybe all the above?
They were consistent. You know, they were consistent defensively. They consistently found ways to consistently come away with points. I think what you see with Purdue was they were a team of runs. They have a great run, they slow down. They have a great run, they slow down. UConn is not built. UConn comes out consistently, and they're going to play consistent basketball the whole game. So I think when you look at that game, and the game wound up being a larger margin than people expected because they're just that consistent. The reason why they're national champions. When you get UConn on the floor, you know what UConn team you're getting. And with Purdue, like I said, unfortunately, when you're a team of runs, unless you put enough a big enough run that the other team can't keep pace, you're going to have those points where a consistent team is going to beat you. And UConn is that team.
And they had proven that all season long. I picked UConn to win it all, even though at the very end, I thought to myself, you know what? I've been an underdog my entire life. I like the underdog role, and that's who I'm picking. And that was Purdue. There was no question in my mind who was going to win that game. And it wasn't going to be Purdue. It was going to be UConn. But in my heart of hearts, I wanted Purdue to do it because they had Edie, who's a Canadian, but the dominant play that he possessed, it was a matter of turnovers, a matter of mistakes. And I had stated this to Tim Brando on social, and I said, look, whoever makes the fewest amount of mistakes will win the game. And it's indicative of other sports. We see it in the NFL. We see it in the NBA. We see it in the WNBA. We see that in golf, right? I mean, this is an individual sport, but still, you know, when you don't capitalize on a ball that's maybe four inches away from the hole and you curve it, you're giving someone else an opportunity. Same exact concept within the other layers of sports that I just mentioned. So a lot to unpack. And I don't know that we're going to see this again in the upcoming women's and men's NCAA basketball season. I suspect there could be some type of hyperbole associated with some of the teams, and UConn obviously being one of them, being the first back-to-back team that had done this since the early 1900s. So this is hard. This is hard to repeat, but a three-peat in the NCAA, that's unheard of. You see it in the NBA, right, with the Lakers, you see it with the Celtics. Is this a three-peat for UConn, or is there maybe Purdue getting back in the mix?
I don't know if UConn makes it a third time around. 10-1, what you're going to see is one of the teams that fell short. It's going to find a way to improve their team without losing too much. So don't be surprised you see a stronger North Carolina team next year. Don't be surprised, although Calipari is moving on, you may see a better Kentucky team next year. Or don't be surprised you get a better Memphis team coming out. That's a team that program. Yeah, the Arkansas. You're going to see some of those teams, that programs that were coming up this year, that were, or trying to rebound this year, Duke, start to improve and make a bet. And once you get in that tournament, it's all about making it the right run at the right time, playing your best basketball. So sure. I think what you're going to see is one of those teams come back. I think UConn is still going to be the class of the Big East. I think they're going to come back in strong, probably be Final Four again. But there will be a team, I think, that does get them next year. It's just going to be a point where there's going to be a better team from a better conference that comes in and catches them at the right time.
Sure, absolutely. You had mentioned Calipari moving on to Arkansas, and that was kind of a mind blower to some. Clearly not a mind blower between him and his wife, because they had made that formal decision to have another voice in for Kentucky. And that's perfectly fine. I have no issue with that. As a matter of fact, I think he went about it the right way. I think he did it the right way. And the message he sent to everyone, without naming people, and he'd stated that he would go on for 50 more times naming other individuals associated with his success there. I think in totality, when you look at the program, they're at the highest possible point right now. Yeah, short of a national championship, granted, but there's a new voice. And sometimes that new voice is what's needed to get you over the top, to push you mentally and emotionally and physically to the edge where you can compete at the highest level. And of course, the head coach for UConn, speaking of coaches, doesn't plan on going anywhere anytime soon. And I can't say that I blame him.
But I'll tell you, with Calipari, I think it was time. We knew everybody was calling for it because they lost. First of all, you look at the season they've had. You look at the run they made. Yes, they lost. It's disappointing. But once again, you are getting the top recruits. You're always making these runs. You're a competitive team. Me and Monty Perez years ago at one of the bowl games had a huge debate in the press box about when do you fire a winning coach? You fire him when you no longer believe he can push the program any further. He's reached his max. Okay. You don't fire him just because he hasn't got what you want. Right. And we were having that debate over Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. You know, he can't seem to win the big game. He can't. So, but you don't fire him. He's why I fire him now, because I think this is the best he's going to do. I don't think we're ever going to achieve beyond this. Or do you say we just need the right mixture along with what he needs to go out there and accomplish what we need to accomplish? I think at that point, it was a little bit of frustration. They couldn't achieve what they wanted to. He didn't believe that it was going to get any better. He had some of the best recruits, but a lot of one and dones. It's hard to keep rebuilding a team every year when you have your best players constantly leaving your program. So I think it was at the point where he says, if I go to Arkansas, it's not Kentucky. I'm not, the expectations are different. I can rebuild this program, win, and possibly get a good enough team that we can get in the tournament and do something and catch people by surprise, because I don't have to continually get the top ball player that's going to leave me in a year anymore. So it may have been the better situation to say, hey, it's time for both of us to part ways. You have a specific idea for your program. I have a different idea for what I want to do. And I think that's where that all came into play.
Sure. You know, the level of separation is just minimal, right? So we think about the type of coach that you are, what you bring to that team, and what you know you can bring to a team that did not even make the tourney, and where it wasn't even in question as to whether or not they were going to be there in the current year that you're in. But then moving forward, going back to that conversation you stated you had, I think that you keep someone who consistently shows upgrades and improvements, whether it's you're talking about football, the special teams, you know, offense, defense, who are your key players, quarterback carousel, who's a starter, who's not going to be the starter. There's so much to unwrap, right? We talk about that onion, peeling it back. And I think that the core of the transitional move that Calipari made to go to Arkansas was very strong. It was odoriferous. And he certainly made the effort with, you know, tears in his eyes behind the scenes stating, well, it's a shame, it's a bummer, but this is what we agreed to, this is what I agreed to, and here we are to make the Arkansas program not just relevant, but as you stated, compete at the highest level. And I think that they have the right guy in the right place to do the right things, and that's to get this team in the right position to win overall when it's all said and done. That there was some quotations in regards to the ESPN draw. Jimmy Pitaro, who's the chairman over at ESPN, stated that these exceptional athletes, coaches, and teams captured attention in unprecedented ways, and it's incumbent on all of us to keep the incredible momentum going, Pitaro said in a statement. Now, let me unwrap that for a second. They've seen probably the largest numbers since Angel Reese was on the floor. And of course, they lost at LSU. But the competitive nature, the idealism that now women have been placed on the map of NCAA basketball, I think that the gender divide is now a little on the flip side. And I don't, and I take nothing away from the men's whatsoever, because I've seen some of these guys compete at the highest level. I was on the floor for the championship game back in 2018 when Michigan won it all. Go Blue. They did it all. And the coach walked right by me and he says, "Well, you like that, do you?" And I said, "Oh yes, coach, I do." Why? Because you've seen these guys compete and it's not even close. The way that they did it, how they did it, the players, the role players, the bench scorers, there's so much to love about this game. The women's were just as passionate, if not more so passionate. There was so much conversation with the head coach for South Carolina, Caitlin Clark. Will she be able to get over that hump? You know, is she putting Iowa on the map? And the answer to all of that is yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, bottom line.
And I think what you see and why it's more interesting to fans, especially why it's appealing more with the women's side, it's more still about the competition, right? It's about who's got the best team, who's going to play the best basketball, who's got the best players. All right. With the men's side, most sports on the men's side have been tainted by the money, right? We see college basketball. Why is it in the shape it's in? Because everybody chases the money in the NBA, right? Why is college football struggling with the connect with fans right now? Other than the ratings, that mean the games are exciting, yes, but overall, there's a fan dissatisfaction with it because they can't keep track of their favorite players anymore. Why? Because everybody's transferring around. Everybody's mad at NIL. Everybody's the money, the business side of men's sports is what's disconnecting with the fans right now. But in this case, you have a game that's still mostly pure. Okay, there's not as much money wrapped up in women's basketball. There will be now going forward, now that the ratings are there and everything else. You're going to see a big jump in all of that now. Like a lot more towards NIL, towards female basketball players, because there's going to be a lot more money being drawn into that side of the bracket. So, but right, it's less tainted than the men's side, and it's less tainted where the fans are aware how tainted it is. Okay, the money side has really affected the fans' idea of men's sports, especially on the collegiate side, especially when we're talking NIL. NIL is the devil right now. And it shouldn't be, because it's the only way to reward the college basketball, the college athlete in general, right? So it shouldn't be the devil. But even the fans are against it right now, because it's just done so much to the game that as they've known it so far. They've always known college players to be kind of loyal. They're not loyal. But guess what? The coaches weren't loyal because they ran for the money too, right? So it's the money side of men's sports is kind of disconnected with the fans. The women's side isn't as disconnected, and fans are starting to realize that they're buying into the competitiveness of it. So once you get back to that point where people can now connect to the game the way they used to, I think it'll be great for both sides. But right now, it's going to push you towards the women's side, because the money side doesn't. The fans just don't agree. We can't identify with college athletes making more than us. It's something that's the reality of sport right now, but it's one of the problems that men's sports in general right now, the major sports, college football, college basketball, are having. You're not seeing it so much with college baseball, but you're seeing it with those other sports.
Yeah, no, you certainly are. And I'm going to go back to something you had just stated, because I think the opposite could be true. There could be some reflection on the men's sports now that they've seen how crushing the women's viewership actually is. So the reverse effect could be the most accurate poll to help kind of, I would have to say, mitigate what's currently going on within the dynamics of men's sports, including football. Let's not exclude them from this conversation, because we're talking about collegiate sports as a whole. And so that could have a positive reflection on what the men's side of sports looks like, how the review of, and or excuse me, how to preview what those sports are going to look like if the women's side is simply still pure, still accurate, still honest, and above all else, not looking for the big dollar payout. Yeah, okay, fine. I'm with the student athletes getting paid. I don't have a problem with that. But when that overrides your ability and puts on a filter on that lens that does not need to be there, that's where it really boils down to the rubber meeting the road and say, you know what, are we going to do this the right way, or are we going to continue doing this the wrong way? This is Rudy Reyes here on the RudeDogShow.com, joined by Jeff Barnes, not here for much longer. Jeff, last but not least, we've seen the kind of shooting. We're going to talk about some numbers here. UConn had 46% from the field, Iowa 45.8, obviously within the certain margin of error plus minus. But the difference was the three-point shots, at 32% for UConn, 28% for Iowa. But then the turnovers nearing the end of that game were costly. Again, the one that makes the fewest amount of mistakes will win. Iowa made those mistakes, and I think it costed them dearly, although they did have plenty more rebounds than UConn, 37 to 29. You know, there's a statement by Michael Jordan, the great Michael Jordan, Air Jordan, who stated that it's not the shots that you miss that matters, it's the shots that you make that does. And when we talk about the ones that are made, that were made by the women's between UConn and Iowa, there was a lot of perimeter shoots that were actually dropping in, that were actually dropping in for UConn, whereas the ones for Iowa did not. And the three-point attempts just simply was not there for Iowa, especially Caitlin Clark, who had a very slow start to the beginning of that game and throughout. However, the ones that were missed between UConn and Iowa were relatively even. And I don't even say that from the perimeter. I mean inside of the paint. The ones that are right there next to the iron are able to really shove that over the top to get that ball in. There certainly are reasons why you make the shots that you make, from a comfort level, from an awareness level, and above all else, the fact that that is your shot. I mean, you've heard that before. This is your shot. You take that shot. Don't be a passer. When you have the open shot, make it, or you're going to break it. And sure enough, that's what happened to Iowa, who lost heavily against UConn. And of course, for those that weren't watching it, that were under a rock, 87 to 75 was your final. South Carolina goes on an undefeated NCAA championship run. Congratulations to the coach, to the players, and everyone there. But I think Iowa should not bow their head down and should not stick it in the sand, because they have plenty more excitement to go in the next tourney, because I believe they're going to be there and they're going to be probably one of the top 10 within.
Absolutely. I think we got to give credit to Dawn Staley, what she's done with that program, continually building some amazing teams. This run was magical, to say the least. They beat an excellent team. See another strong run from them next year. And I think we can start putting Dawn Staley on that Pat Summit, Gino Auriano, sure. Because she is doing it consistently. And this is what we're looking for from everybody loves the college dynasties, especially on the women's side. She is starting to build that same kind of run. Now, it's nice when you're beating schools that are definitely, they've earned the respect that allows you to go out there and earn the dynasty label. She's beaten the UConn. She's beaten the LSUs. She's beaten now Iowa and one of the best female basketball players of all time. So I think now we can start to look at South Carolina and Dawn Staley and say, this is going to be that next Hall of Fame coach, and that next program coach that sets the tone for women's basketball for a long time. Like I said, Pat Summitt did it. We talked about Auriana doing it. she is now on that pedestal. It'd be wrong to deny her. She's put together an amazing program.
Yeah, she has done absolutely everything you would want a head coach to do, and all that with an undefeated record. Record. That is so hard to do. Forget the tourney. Let's think about what they did when it was all rainbows and Skittles. It was going through those motions, playing your first game, getting those jitters out of the way, you get your first W. Okay, great, wonderful. Let's go on the next one. When you think about the regular season for them, it was absolutely phenomenal. Forget the Final Four, forget the Elite Eight, forget the Sweet 16, forget the championship game, because that's where you test the mettle of any given amount of players. In any professional team sport, that is where you count it in the regular season. Now, you can throw the records out of the window when you're talking about championship games or entries into those, but when it's all said and done, they did absolutely everything right. There was very little done wrong, if anything at all. And Dawn Staley definitely deserves a cap tip for everything that she did. Jeff, where can everybody find you on social, and how can they connect with you?
They can connect me once again. I'm on X. I still call it Twitter, but at JeffBarnes29. By all means, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. On the Team MBS media social channels, on our YouTube channel, you can find Draft Central. Will be live tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central. That's 6 p.m. on the West Coast. And by all means, we're talking day three sleepers tonight. We're also going to talk some Chicago Bears, a good friend of the show, Dan Goodwin. So definitely you can find me there. Also, they're all live, all 3 days of the draft. We'll be on Team MBS Media for every pick, every round from start to finish. So by all means, I'm enjoying this time of year. This is when I'm in my wheelhouse when it comes to draft scouting. And a few more weeks, I get to actually enjoy family.
Yeah, like family on the backside, and we have football on the front side. Like it's like the flip side of a record. Nobody wants to listen to the B side. They're too busy with the A side. Well, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it. Enjoy. Have a great show. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. This is Rudy Reyes of the RudeDogShow.com. Please download the True TV Plus app on your Roku device. We're on Apple TV as well, so make sure you download that. It's been fabulous. Thank you so much, Jeff. I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you. Anytime. I'm happy to come on.
Carte blanche. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'm Rudy Reyes. You'll find this episode on therudedogshow.com. You can go to YouTube, find me there, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, all at The Rude Dog Show, except for IG, which is Rudy R. Reyes. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate you tuning in. Have a great day. Jeff, thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.